Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the second Monday of every month, it must be Empowering Women, sponsored by Right Now or Heighton and Lewis. Jim Heighton, it is so nice seeing you. You're back.
Yes. Good to see you.
It's been a while, right?
It has been.
I mean, we've had all your great attorneys and guests on, and I think the last time you were on was, when was that? It's been a while.
Probably about a year ago.
Yeah. And you're back because you want to be a radio personality.
No.
Okay, maybe not. No, but you're a great attorney.
I'm going to be an attorney.
Yeah, and a great one, too.
But thank you.
I give you a shout-out every single time, don't I?
I do. I hear it every time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And it's but it's true. I really, really think so highly of your firm. Every one of your attorneys is amazing, and you guys are expanding, too.
Yes, we've been getting some more people in the office and putting some new legal areas to work in the firm, so it's been growing. So,
well, this is it. Just shows the mindset, how it works, and it's so important in business and in life, where despite the economy, people can flourish, not just survive, but they can flourish. They can do very well, and you have that mindset and the collective mindset of your whole company,
right?
Knowing that can happen.
Well, and our whole view of things is, you know, servicing our clients, giving them the best work, and be able to give them the best advice. And that's why I'm so excited about what we're doing here today, because this is a really big area for everybody.
This is a powerful show, and of course we are honored, and it's a pleasure to have Ruth Ann Laswick, Vice President of Marketing for Black Gould and Associates. Welcome, Ruth Ann.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, this is great, because this is a subject that I think is causing confusion with so many people. And it's, of course, the health care reform, the whole thing with that. What is it called?
It's called the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act.
Wow. Do we need patient protection from not being affordable? That might be the key. I bet they don't have a provision in there for that. But so this is what we're going to talk about. And I do think it causes confusion. What have you seen out there before we get into some of the guts of what this act really says?
I think we are seeing some confusion. Part of what we're seeing is misinformation out there. I mean, we've seen all the rumors about how, for example, last year there was a rumor that was circulated via email that there was a real estate tax in the legislation. And that wasn't accurate. There was a tax on rents and royalties, and somebody interpreted that to be on the sale of real property. Mm. So we're seeing a lot of misinformation out there on the legislation.
Yeah, and that's often the case with massive bills, I bet. It's like no one's reading it, even the people that write it. I believe, Jim, you're an attorney.
Yeah.
Do you think how many senators and congressmen really read these bills?
I would like to see how many actually read it before they voted on it.
Yeah. That do you have any information on that?
I wouldn't even guess.
Okay, but it does seem like that's what the case is. So let's talk in brief. First of all, what is this whole bill about? What's the purpose of it? What were they trying to accomplish, and have they accomplished anything yet?
Okay, the intent of the legislation was twofold. The intent was, A, to give access and coverage to folks who couldn't buy it or didn't have coverage. And that the legislation has made some inroads on. And then the second piece was to make it affordable. And that's where we're still struggling quite a bit.
And so I suspect the first part, having access and coverage, that seems to maybe will work and has been working. But the affordability is an issue. So why is that an issue?
Well, you know, with respect to any type of a plan like this, as you enhance benefits, as you cover more people, there's more cost. It's the nature of the beast. And we haven't gotten to the extent of being able to cut those costs at all, which is what we need to do. Is we need to be able to cut the cost. The cost of health care or health insurance is directly related to the cost of care. And that's where we need to work on it, is the cost of the care.
So some of the, and we were talking off the air a little bit, what are some of the ways they can, costs can actually be cut?
Well, having a healthy lifestyle is probably the number one way. There are innumerable studies about the impact of eating right, not drinking in excess, of not smoking, and the impact down the line on your physical health. And if you stay healthy, then you're not going to incur the additional cost of getting all the terrible diseases.
So is it possible to carve out a custom lifestyle, you know, like a menu, like if you do this lifestyle, your premium will be this? Would that be difficult?
It's very difficult right now. It's not impossible. Right now, the way it's set up, and those are essentially called wellness programs, is you take a health risk on someone and you say, okay, you need to do these things. And if you do those, then here's your incentive for doing those. Mm. What's going to change under the legislation is in 2014, rather than giving an incentive to someone for taking a smoking cessation program, for example, there's going to be penalties if they don't. So the employers in 2014 are actually going to be able to charge, for example, smokers more for their health insurance than they do the non-smoker.
Now, how do you monitor that? I mean, do you send out like a secret agent to see, aha, this guy's smoking? And then how much smoking do you have to do to incur a penalty?
Well, a lot of this is still to be defined. But I can tell you, for example, if you're buying life insurance, if you've had a puff of a cigarette, it shows up in your blood or your urine test for a very, very long time.
Like how long?
I want to say a year, but I'm not an EMT, so I can't tell you for sure, but it's a very long time.
What about secondhand smoke? What does that show up?
It doesn't show up. For whatever reason, it's a direct relationship. So what we'll see is, and this is part of the issues with the legislation, while that's a piece in there to control the wellness factors and having a healthier lifestyle, we also have this piece of legislation called HIPAA that we've had around for several years that says you can't ask certain questions. So the two pieces kind of don't talk to each other right now. And that's some clarification that between now and 2014 is going to have to come about.
Wow. Jim, that sounds like it's challenging at best.
Yes, I think that's what's so difficult about this law is knowing, you know, what's going to happen. And Ruthann, a lot of this is when we say it's going to have to be developed, this is going to come from regulations from departments. Most of it's going to be by regulation as opposed to further laws, or are they going to have to enact further laws to get where they need to be?
Now, the legislation itself is designed, and you have to understand the 2,700 pages was essentially an outline. But in the legislation, it says a lot of times that the secretary shall, and who they're talking about is the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Mm-hmm. So everything that it needs clarification or needs guidance comes from the Secretary of Health and Human Services, usually in a joint communication from the Department of Treasury and the Department of Labor. They come out as what's called an interim final regulation, and then the public actually has 90 days to comment on that regulation.
The public?
The public, absolutely.
But does that mean they have to read it?
Well, they'd have to know it came out, yes.
Yes.
But they do have 90 days to make their comments, and then at the end of those 90 days, either the comments are taken into consideration and something's tweaked, or it becomes final regulation.
Wow, that sounds, if there's not enough, right, Jim, massive Internal Revenue Code sections and regulations now, just when you thought it was safe to get back in the water, what happens?
Right, more regulations.
Man,
more regulations.
This is,
yeah.
Does this drive you nuts, Ruthann, or is this you just look at it as something to interpret to help people understand?
You know, it can be frustrating because you're trying very hard to help people understand, to help employers plan for the future when you're really sitting with limited guidance at this point in time. So you can take some best guesses based on what's happened in the past or based on the approach that's been taken thus far with the regulations, the parts of the regulations that have been implemented, but you're really pretty much flying blind.
You know, and of course, there's a lot of misconceptions out there. We talked a little bit about this before we started, and I've taken some seminars over the last year on some of these things, but no one seemed to really fully understand it because I guess it's not understandable yet. But like for employer groups, one misperception or conception is some employers wanted to take the penalty versus pay the health insurance cost because they thought it was cheaper. Comment on that.
Well, and first of all, I have to tell you, as the legislation sits today, the employers with less than 50 employees don't need to worry about it.
Okay. Although they get a credit if you're all under 25 employees.
Right,
I think.
That's a small employer tax credit. But the employer penalty doesn't apply to groups under 50 employees.
Which is quite a few businesses.
In
right?
Arizona, it's like 99,000. It's a big number.
Oh, wow. So the ones over 50, I suspect they already have insurance for their employees. Is that right?
The majority of the time, they already do have insurance. And sometimes you hear a reaction like that when they simply get frustrated with trying to comply with the law. But it still comes back to group insurance came about in the 1940s when there were wage freezes and they were trying to incentivize people to come to work for them. And that's not going to go away. If you're in competition and the other guy offers group coverage, you will too.
Well, that makes sense. That's the free market, right, Jim?
Right.
Competition. Now, so under 50 employees, you don't have to, you there's no penalties.
There's no penalty for not providing coverage.
Now, here's another misperception. Is that the right word? Misperception or misconception? What do you say, Jim?
I'd say a misperception or a
misconception.
Misconception.
I'll stick with perception. Yeah. Now, my understanding is that everyone in America they have to be covered. Is that true? Or and if not, there's a tax on their individual tax return, a penalty. Comment on that, because I think we need to clear that up, too.
Okay, and that's the individual mandate that all the lawsuits are going on, and quite frankly, we're all going to wait until the Supreme Court tells us.
But the way it was
but
written.
But the way it's written is all Americans, with the exception of certain groups, must purchase health insurance or they're going to pay a penalty, and the penalty begins in 2014 at $95 or 1% of income. And when I say with exception, there are exceptions to the rules. I'm going to try to do this from memory. But, for example, if your religious beliefs do not believe in insurance, you don't have to purchase insurance. If you're incarcerated, you don't have to purchase insurance. If you're a member of the tribal community, you don't have to purchase insurance. If you're in a short-term period without insurance, less than 90 days, you don't have to purchase insurance. So there are some exceptions to the rules.
So that might be an issue in itself. How do you define religious, beliefs that you don't need
insurance? It will be interesting.
As an attorney, Jim, how do you even litigate that?
That's going to be very interesting. But it sounds like that a lot of this we really won't know, or people won't be able to make that decision until we almost get to 2014 when we see what premiums have gone to vis-a-vis the penalty.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and, you know, I always use the example that if you're looking at it from a penalty point of view, you know, it's beyond the penalty. It's being accountable for yourself,
mm-hmm.
okay? And I tend to use the example of a young man because I have a 20-something son. If you take a 20-something right now, it's going to cost that young man about $100 a month to buy health insurance. Well, the penalty for him, if he doesn't, and if he gets caught in 2014, is $95.
A year?
Yeah. So it's pretty much beer or no beer.
Right.
Wow.
Good.
It's only $95. So people are going to think, well, what's 95, right?
And if they get caught.
And what happens if they get caught? Oh, and that's if they get caught.
That's if they get caught. Now, again, we have some time, and there's a chance that those penalties might get strengthened or there might be some type of tweaking done to that. But that's the law today.
Wow, I wonder if they would say, we'll have someone break your legs and you'll need insurance, so you better get it. No, just kidding for the listeners out there. However, when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with special in-studio guest Ruth Ann Laswick, Vice President of Marketing for Black Gould and Associates. And, of course, we have Jim Heitenen here from Reitenauer Heitenen Lewis. This is Empowering Women. I'm going to ask you a question so we can contemplate it. Does this put a burden on the IRS to really look over and examine these provisions that affect tax returns? We'll be right back.
Why Heidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Heidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Can I safely assume that this is not the kind of guitar you play?
I do play that guitar. And that's Tom, our producer. Wow. So thank you, Tom. That was a birthday wish for someone.
And many more magnificent moments for you, my friend.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That's really cool. I had no idea this was going to happen. And let's all sing. Where's the Beatles song? That's what I want to know. Oh, he's probably going to play that one. Who is that? Who plays that guitar? I used to play guitar, but that wasn't me, darn. Okay, anyway, thank you so much, Tom. That was very cool. And, of course, we have special in-studio guest Ruth Ann Laswick. Oh, there's the Beatles song. Yes. Wow, he had it right away. I didn't even know. Remember that song?
That's a very good producer.
Yeah, that's a very good song. Now he's dancing. I can't believe it. Anyway, thank you so much, Tom. That was very cool. That was a big hit.
We got to hear the words here.
Oh, do they got the words? Oh, they do. Thank you so much. Anyway, special in-studio guest Ruth Ann Laswick, Vice President of Marketing for Black Gould & Associates, and, of course, our friend Jim Heighton from Heidenauer, Heighton & Lewis. This is Empowering Women, and wow, Jim, you have a great guest. You are amazing, Ruth Ann.
Oh, well, thank you.
It's doesn't she have a beautiful smile, too?
She does. She does.
You brighten up the room. I bet any place you go, people have told you that. But I left off just before the break, the burden on the IRS. That sounds funny, burden on the IRS. But I guess they were going to hire a bunch of people just to help the compliance part of this health care bill. Talk a little bit about that.
Originally, the IRS was supposed to hire 16,000 new agents to help with the implementation of this piece of legislation, but with current budget restraints, they have yet to put those people on board. So.
Wow. So you think they ever will, or is this just, who knows, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Who knows? But that's how they're going to track. There's additional taxes in here. There's the penalties. There's the tax credits, and all of that's going to take IRS involvement. So.
Yeah, that's right, because I think it's I mean, anytime you have new bills come out that have new provisions, I guess I don't know if that necessarily equates, Jim, to more people on the job for the IRS. But I mean, how does that equate? I mean, if it's part of an audit, it's part of an audit. It's just one more line item, right?
Yeah, it'll probably just mean audits will take longer because they'll have to go through and check all of these items. So. Maybe that's what they're looking at is putting more people on so that they can continue to keep the same number of audits.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's very interesting. So anyway, you had a question, I think. No, I was reading nonverbal. Let's go to change or not to change. Companies and individuals, they're up for renewal sometimes. It's very enticing sometimes to go ahead and switch companies because – I guess you get what's called a teaser rate, or a rate that's well below what you're paying. But is that a good thing or not? Comment on that, because we were talking off there about that. You got to be careful.
Well, you do have to be careful, and honestly, teaser rates have kind of gone away. That was a little bit of in the past.
Wow, yeah. So there's no such thing as a teaser rate?
No, not anymore. We don't see that very often at all. But what I think you're referring to is the grandfathering. And what the grandfathering is as the legislation was going through the process and being debated on the floor of the House and the Senate, you kept hearing them refer to, but if you like your plan, you can keep it. Well, that's what grandfathered status means, is if you like your plan that was in place on March 23rd, 2010, the day the president signed the legislation, the day it became law, then you can keep that plan. And for employer groups, they really need to look at that, because the advantage to having a grandfathered plan is that you don't have to implement all of the reforms that the new plans are going to have. Now, there are some you have to implement anyway, but you don't have to implement all of them. So the theory is, in 2014, a grandfathered plan that is identical to a non-grandfathered plan will cost less because it doesn't have all the reforms in it. So it's kind of one of those that you're looking at your dollars today and you're being handed a renewal of whatever percentage, and you have to kind of look at your present value of dollars versus your future possible value. Now, there is one component to the legislation that's very much up in the air right now, but it does need to be considered, and that's for employer groups who are discriminating. And when I say discriminating, that means that there's a segment of their population, generally the non-highly compensated population, who aren't getting the same benefit, the same amount of the employer subsidies, or they have a longer waiting period. And if that happens, then there's a discrimination issue within the employer group, within the health insurance group. Right now, the legislation as passed says for all non-grandfathered plans, you can't discriminate. Okay? Where we're at right now is you still can't discriminate. The legislation is there that you cannot discriminate, but the penalties are on hold. Hmm. Okay, so if you are discriminating right now, the penalty is on hold. It's been on hold for a while now. It was supposed to go live last year. It didn't. It's been delayed 3 times. Last best guess was we will see it for plan years beginning in 2012. But the way the law was written is if you're discriminating and you're not grandfathered, your penalty is $100 a day for every person you're discriminating against. So it was a big number.
$100 a day for every person?
Wow.
You're discriminating against?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So that's why if you're looking at it and you're an employer group and you're discriminating, you need to kind of think about that grandfathered thing. Again, we don't know what's going to happen with that penalty. It's been delayed 3 times, and we're still waiting. So
now, who does the testing for this? I mean, I'm sure there's a formula to figure out how to test if there's discrimination going on within the highly or the non-highly compensated people. So is it the insurance companies? Is it the attorneys or the CPAs? I vote for the attorneys. That's my opinion.
Well, the insurance companies are a definite no. It is somewhere between the agents and brokers and consultants and CPAs is where we've seen it fall.
Really?
And again, it's all come to a halt because there's no penalty. And people are like, why should I pay for a test if I'm not paying a penalty right now? But it's actually Internal Revenue Code 105H.
Wow, you're good at this. 105H. Now, oh, I recognize 105.
Yeah.
Jim, have you come across this with any of your clients to say, hey, you got to do some testing, or do you, how does this work with your group?
Well, we've been talking about it because we've known that the testing provision is in there. And, you know, there are other benefits that you also have testing on in terms of like retirement benefits and what have you. You look at non-discrimination and anti-discrimination provisions. So this is going to be kind of another test that you're going to have to run to see if, you know, you run afoul of the discrimination tests. One question I had, Ruthann, is in the future, is the grandfathering going to almost kind of naturally go away after a while? Won't the insurance companies, after a number of years, just kind of start to peel away those plans that are grandfathered in and try and put people into new plans or under the new law?
It is going to be very difficult to maintain grandfathered status through 2014. And we have already seen some insurance carriers do that, where they have simply changed the plans to the extent that the employer or the individual lost their grandfathered status, because there's very, very little you can do to these plans. And interestingly enough, when the legislation first came out, one of the things you couldn't do was change insurance companies. And that got changed. That was one of those things that the interim final regs, they actually listened and said, hey, you know, really? But no two insurance companies that I've seen thus far have plans that are close enough to let you do that. So you still, the essence is you still can't change carriers.
Now, on these penalties, that only applies, or let me ask you, is it would not apply for employers less than 50?
No, that applies to everything.
Everyone. So you're right. Talking the under 50 is just whether you have insurance or not.
Right. And there is a huge formula. I mean, you subtract certain people and you don't count certain aged people. And it's a big test. But, yeah, the legislation itself applies to everybody. There's certain pieces that apply to just self-funded, but the employer mandate applies to where you have to offer coverage or have a penalty is 50 and up. But the rest of it applies to all size groups.
But for now, it's on hold. So
right, the penalty's on hold.
Could be discrimination still at this point.
Right. And you know, we don't know what's going to happen. It could be we have seen a couple of pieces of the legislation change because it was tacked onto some other bill. And so that's one of those areas that if it's not popular, there may be a piece of legislation that has to get through and somebody else decides to just attach that.
They do that.
They do. Yes, they do.
I just saw a movie. What was it called? Let's see. With George Clooney. And George Clooney, it was about the Tides of March or something, or something like that. It was all about the political behind the scenes. It's brutal. That's all I could say. It looked pretty I think it was a pretty good movie. You guys should catch that and see what's going on, the deals they make. And it's sort of scary to think that's who's running the country. But if that's the case, not good. So anyway, let's go to really to change or not to change, that's the grandfathering. So I would think overall you make an economic decision, and that's probably the bottom line.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I would touch base with my agent or my consultant or somebody to tell me, you know, which of the market reforms are going to hit if I do lose grandfathered status.
Yeah, and but I think Jimmy made a good point that if it's all going away at some point, then I guess the part of your decision making that has to be part of your decision making. Like, well, maybe there won't be grandfathering anyway in a couple years.
Correct.
So
right.
that makes sense. Now, how about exchanges? I don't know. I've heard so many things about exchanges. I don't even know what they're talking about. I heard it was in and then it was out. What's the status? What is an exchange, first of all?
Let's start with what an exchange is, because it's something we've all seen. An exchange is a web portal where you can go in. You say, I'm, you know, a female. I'm 35 years old. I've got two kids. I want to buy this kind of a plan. And you hit a button, and it gives you a list of all the plans available in your area and a price. And you hit another button that says buy. That's what an exchange is.
Oh, okay. That's all it is?
That's all it is.
Well, that sounds like it could lower cost, right?
Well, here's the issue with it. And let me take it from that's all it is to what it's going to become.
Oh, okay? Good point.
Because there are exchanges now, and you'll hear the term private exchange. And all it really is an insurance rating system. Okay. But the exchange that's being referred to in 2014 is going to marry that to the public plans. So when you go on, you're going to have some type of an identifier, presumably a tax ID number or something to that effect. And when you punch that in, it's going to attach to Homeland Security to make sure you're a legal resident. It's going to attach to the IRS to check your wages and your tax return to see whether or not you're eligible for tax credits or subsidies. So there's going to be that side. If you're eligible for Medicare, Medicaid access in Arizona, it's going to tell you you need to go to this side to get your access and to sign up or to sign up for kids care. So it's going to marry the two systems, the public and the private, is what's being talked about in 2014.
Well, Jim, have you ever heard the term Big Brother?
I was just thinking exactly those words when we were talking. That just sounds like Big Brother to me sign in and then have it bounce into the IRS and have them determine whether or not you're qualified for one plan or another.
Who's voting for this stuff? That's what I want to know. Okay, that's political. Yes. But no, that sounds, I don't know, you hear all this talk. I don't want to get political, that, you know, you want to sort of pare down government a little bit, but doesn't this sound like it's moving up?
It does. It does. It's very few things that you're going to put on the internet are going to bounce into the IRS and have them tell you whether or not you can purchase something based on what they know about you. That's a very strange situation. But let me ask you this: with are these exchanges by state, or is this going to be just one giant national kind of thing?
Both. So what's going to happen is the states have been directed to set up an exchange. Not all states are going to. If your state doesn't set up an exchange, you're going to have to go to the federal exchange. So the feds are going to have an exchange as well that you can go to. Part of what we're seeing is eventually all states will need legislation to have an exchange. And last September, the end of September, was a cutoff for grant submission. For any state who was looking to set up an exchange, they had to get their grants in and their request for so much money to set up the exchange, because there's funding to set up the exchange. But what we're seeing from a political side is the states who have all partnered together to sue the federal government over the individual mandate tend to not pass exchange legislation. Instead, if they're planning to do an exchange, they have a gubernatorial task force set up. Mm-hmm. So there is no legislation to implement an exchange, but there's a task force. Because the reality of it is, when you back off all of the dates between when it has to go live and when you have to prove to Health and Human Services that you're capable of running it, you have to be able to run an exchange by a year from now. And if you can't, then the feds will step in.
Wow, just when you thought it was safe to get back in the water. And when we come back from our break, we're going to continue our discussion with special in-studio guest Ruth Ann Laswick, Vice President of Marketing for Black Gould and Associates, and, of course, our friend Jim Hyten, who is one of the great partners from Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis. This is Empowering Women. And I will have another question on the impact on the state's finances having these exchanges. That's going to be a trick. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Empowering Women, sponsored by Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis, with Jim Hyten. And Jim, we have a great special guest, of course, in studio. You've been magnificent, Ruth Ann Laswick, Vice President of Marketing for Black Gould & Associates. You are enlightening us. Jim and I are just sitting there like, are you kidding me? Right? I mean, this is amazing.
I agree.
And some of the other question before the break, I had these exchanges that you just talked about, where states evidently have to set these things up, the impact on the state's finances. Do they have the funds to even set these exchanges up?
Well, there are federal grants to set them up, but what has to happen is a year later they have to be self-sustaining.
Oh.
So they can get set up. It's a matter of the continuation of the exchanges. So we may see a lot of different things. I mean, for example, there may be a policy fee in an exchange that you don't pay outside of an exchange.
Fund the exchange.
To fund the exchange.
Well, probably that's, or can they take it from the insurance companies that are on the exchange?
Well, they're
either way, the consumer is going to get it. That's what's going to happen.
Right.
I said that nicely,
right.
Didn't yeah. I? Oh, wow. Let's talk a little bit more. I'm intrigued by this exchange, but the only exchange that Jim and I ever heard was 1231, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Tax-deferred exchanges. This brings a whole new meaning. How do you qualify? You said you have to qualify to be on exchange, and not every insurance company, they can pick and choose. They don't have to be on an exchange. Right?
Right. An insurance carrier does not have to be on an exchange. It's their decision as to whether or not they fill out the exchange application.
And the advantages to be and disadvantages?
The advantages to being on the exchange for an insurance carrier is, and first let me explain, there's going to be two different kinds of exchanges. There's going to be one for individuals and one for small employers. And the one specifically for individuals, you're going to get a certain population to purchase through the exchange automatically, because in 2014 there's tax credits. And the tax credits are going to go up to 400% of federal poverty level. So if you are making less than 400% of federal poverty level, you're going to get a tax credit. That's why you're being coordinated with the IRS. You're going to get a tax credit to help pay for your insurance. But the only place you can get that tax credit under the current law is through the exchange. So you're going to have a natural market on the individual products to go through the exchange.
And the small employer, that's under 50?
And the small employer in 2014 is going to go to 100.
Oh, under 100?
Yes. It's 1 to 100.
Wow. Now, what's the poverty level? 400% of poverty level? I don't.
You know, I can tell you right now, 400% of a family of four is 88,000, but I've never kind of looked up the rest of it.
So at 88,000, family of four, that's considered poverty?
400%. Poverty level, if you're making less than 400% of federal poverty level. And then if you're making less than 250, there's another tax subsidy to help offset some of your co-pays and things like that.
So making less than 88,000, you can get a credit.
You could get a credit in 2014, yes.
Huh. Jim, what do you think of that?
Oh, it's an interesting. I was just sitting here thinking, if you have a company that you have a lot of staff people that, you know, aren't making that 88,000, what would happen if a number of them say, well, I'd rather get the exchange insurance and get the credit instead of taking the employer insurance?
Well, it's interesting because, again, much like we talked about the discrimination, the employer contribution penalty is a very long formula. So essentially what happens is, first of all, if you're eligible for employer coverage and you're not paying at least 9.5% of your income towards that coverage, then you aren't eligible for tax credits.
Okay.
If you're contributing more than 9.5% of your income towards your coverage, then it's considered an unaffordable plan, and you have the right to go to the exchange. And if you go to the exchange, and if you get a tax credit, then the employer is still going to have a penalty on just you. But if the employer doesn't offer coverage at all in 2014, and someone goes to the exchange because there's a mandate, they have to have insurance, and they get a tax credit, that's when the penalty kicks in, because then they penalize the employer for everyone who didn't have coverage. So that's how the penalty is tracked, is did an employee go to the exchange and did they get a tax credit?
Wow, this is going to keep someone busy. You think it's the CPAs?
I don't know who this is going to keep busy.
Man, this is... This is a lot more compliance than I think. Wow, I don't even know what to say about that. Now, if the states can't afford and they don't implement an exchange, then you said the federal government comes in.
Correct. And right now the federal government has kind of a mini exchange.
Oh, they do.
It's not a fully operational exchange, but to give you an idea of what it looks like, if you go to healthcare.gov, it already will, if you put in, you know, your zip code in Arizona and you don't have current insurance, it's going to give you a list of plans available in Arizona and what those plans look like. So they're starting down the road using healthcare.gov.
Oh, they are. Mm-hmm. Now, if the state has an exchange, can you still go to the federal exchange?
Or generally not.
Oh, okay. So so move to a state that where there's no exchange, perhaps, or maybe I don't know if the federal exchange is better than the state exchange. Who knows? Is there? You just never know.
You don't know.
Now it's interesting on this combining these systems where you have to put in all your information. It goes to the IRS, and I suspect the IRS is also licking their chops a little bit, saying, "Oh, these guys haven't filed for a while." Right? I mean, that could be one of them.
I would presume there's a lot of things they'll be able to tell from that.
Yes, I agree with that. I mean, that's one of the things that I wonder about when, you know, if people are looking at this and they're saying, wow, gee, I haven't filed for a couple of years, so am I going to actually go in here and put my information and let it bounce back? There's some real interesting questions that are going to come up.
Do you think behind the scenes maybe that's part of the motivation is getting people back in the tax system? Is that, I mean, or were they smart enough to even think of that? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But if you sit down and you think about it, there's a lot of things that can be impacted that way.
I say all three of us should make a movie about this. Wouldn't that be a bestseller? Well, that's a book. But, you know, a major motion picture. Well, let's go on a quick break, and then when we come back, let's talk about the guarantee issue. I think that's a big issue coming up. And, wow, just hold on to your hats here. I bet people are just going off the freeway, sitting down, thinking, what is this stuff? But we'll be right back after this break.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is Empowering Women, sponsored by Ridenour, Heighton & Lewis. And, of course, we have Jim Heighton in studio, along with special in-studio guest Ruth Ann Laswick, Vice President of Marketing for Black Gould & Associates. We've been talking about that whole health care reform bill. What's it called again? The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
Wow. They got to change its title, right, to the Confusion and the Mass Confusion Act, right? What do you think, Jim?
Right.
I think we should change that.
I don't see anything affordable here so far.
No. My insurance went up, by the way, as soon as this passed. It did. It went right. I go, why did it go up? And they said, well, normal annual increases. I said, 33%? Wow, that's a good raise, right, Jim?
That's a good raise.
I think it is. Now, we wanted to talk a little bit about this guarantee issue. What is that? What is the guarantee issue?
Well, right now in the state of Arizona, if you have a medical condition, depending on its severity, and you're an individual, you cannot buy coverage, depending on how severe it is. So if you take someone who is an entrepreneur, they've had cancer, they can't go buy coverage. It just, we don't have a high-risk pool.
That's like the pre-existing condition.
That's the pre-existing condition. So what will happen in 2014 is everyone will be able to buy coverage.
Mm. So that's the guarantee part. Now,
that's the guarantee part.
So what are some of the, well, I guess the advantages, obviously, to some of the general public or a lot of people that have pre-existing conditions, I guess, a nice advantage to them, I suspect.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Disadvantages? Any disadvantages to the other people, the insurance companies, the employer groups?
Well, and I will tell you that you've already seen the disadvantage and the unintended consequence, because part of what happened immediately last year was that the guarantee issue provision for children went into effect. So up to 19 years old, they're guaranteed issue. Well, we used to have in this state the ability for a parent to buy coverage just on their child. It was called a child-only policy. So the mom and dad didn't have to be on it. You could go buy a policy on your 5-year-old.
Really?
And they were very cost-effective. And sometimes on group plans, your dependent cost is pretty high. So if you have just one child, it was less expensive to go buy them a policy, okay, rather than putting them on the employer group. Immediately, the insurance carriers went, we don't offer child-only anymore. The unintended consequence was that policy went away. So now no matter how healthy that child is, you can't buy them a standalone policy. Mom and dad have to be on the plan. And this is where we've seen some of the things and some of the issues come up with respect to employer groups. I get the question probably once a week. Well, we've got we had the ability to keep your adult child to age 26 on your employer's plan. Okay? You have the 24-year-old woman who went back on mom and dad's plan, the 24-year-old son who went back on mom and dad's plan, and they have a baby. Baby's not covered. That's a grandchild.
That doesn't work.
That doesn't
work.
So
then they're totally excluded.
Well, the problem is nothing can happen until after the baby's born once the woman becomes pregnant. After the baby's born, those costs have to be taken care of by the parents or whomever's willing to pay for them because that baby had no coverage. And then mom or dad have to get off of their parents' plan so they can have their own plan and put the baby on a plan, or the baby has no coverage.
Hmm. Did anyone ever think this through?
You know, I like to explain to people that the folks who pass the piece of legislation, they're politicians. They're not in this business, and they can't know the details of this business. And so these are just some of the repercussions that we're having to deal with.
So had they been consulted with, or the insurance people would have thought this through and said, hey, this is what could happen.
You would hope so.
Yeah.
You would certainly hope so.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Now, you did mention something about Medicaid, some other unintended consequence there.
Well, and that's where we start talking about the exchange and the folks that are going to be pushed into Medicaid. Is right now we have a lot of people who are maybe eligible or not and are not signing up. And once you go through that exchange, they may sign up. If they don't make enough to get the tax credit or subsidy or cost sharing subsidy, they may be below all of that and be sent over towards the Medicaid system. Well, the dollars for Medicaid are part from the federal government and part from Arizona state government. So that's going to impact our budget as well.
So that could go up.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, man. So each state is sort of running around trying to figure out what to do, right?
Each state is. Each state is looking at the budgetary impact of this piece of legislation.
Now, of course, I guess this thing has gone to the Supreme Court now, parts of the bill or the whole bill. What's up with that?
Well, pretty much changes every day. It has gone to the Supreme Court. The piece in the Supreme Court is going back to that constitutionality of the tax if you don't buy insurance. Okay, and then we've had legislation where there was one judge in Florida who said the whole thing was not constitutional. So the legislation is in the Supreme Court now. The last I heard, and again, this changes frequently, is oral arguments will begin in March. Originally, I had heard that they were going to try to get a decision out by June. But then more recently, I heard they may not give a decision before the election because it would impact the election. So,
really?
We kind of don't know.
The Supreme Court said it would impact the election? I thought they weren't supposed to say things like that, Jim.
I'm sure they probably didn't put that in a public announcement, but, you know, it's got to occur to everybody that that's clearly going to be a big, big issue in the election. So,
wow, that's incredible. So, so in other words, we don't know what's going to happen. They can say the whole bill's out. They could say parts of the bill are out, but can you really break up the bill and say this part is out without it impacting other parts of the bill, and does it still make sense?
Absolutely not, and that's the biggest problem. When you start talking about, let's go back to the guarantee issue side of this thing. You go back to the guarantee issue side of this thing, part of the reason that guarantee issue would work is because you have an individual mandate, so everybody must buy coverage. But if you don't have a mandate and you have guarantee issue, then people will buy coverage when they're ill. They'll drop coverage when they get well. They'll buy it again when they're ill. And it's a trampoline effect. And the impact of that goes back to everyone else who has today and has forever and will continue to have private insurance. It impacts those rates.
You're going to have a lot of business, Jim, because if that the trampoline effect comes in, then you're going to see a power of attorney for everyone saying, hey, if I'm unconscious, buy me insurance.
Right. On my way to the hospital, buy the insurance.
Yeah. Wow, that is like, well, that would be craziness, right?
That'd be chaos. It would be chaos. It would completely, in my opinion, personal opinion, it would destroy the system we currently have.
Wow. This seems like they could have had a much better system with still the intention of somehow getting people access, I would think, but... Of course, I haven't thought it through, but it sounds like I'm not the only one that hasn't thought it through. So, incredible. Jim, you had a question?
No.
Okay.
No.
Now, let's ask this question. How can we actually lower costs? I mean, is there a way to lower costs? Because it seems like it's just going to keep going up, it appears. My insurance went up. I suspect, Jim's, you're probably it's going up or it could go up. How do you control costs? How can you actually lower costs, make it more affordable, as the name of the bill suggests?
Well, you know, the number one contributing factor to the cost of care is lifestyle. And we just need to be a healthier population. We absolutely do. And, you know, I've been through numerous wellness, and there's a new term being used. Instead of a wellness plan, it's a preventative plan. And there are a number of studies on preventative plans that if you don't smoke, if you don't, you know, eat the foods that aren't good for you, if you don't drink in excess, then the likelihood of getting heart disease is dropped by a huge percentage. The likelihood of getting cancer is dropped by percentages. And those are all the expensive things that happen to you. So it really does. The number one issue is lifestyle.
Yeah, I know we talked a little bit about that. Do you think, can they legislate that? I mean, can they, how do you legislate lifestyle? I don't know.
Well,
the libertarians will have a field day with us, right?
Yes, they will. They will.
I think, and part of the legislation that we're currently talking about, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, made an effort at least educating the consumer. And I think that's number one, is we need to educate the consumer on the true impact on their bodies and the cost of care. But that's where you've seen all of these articles about how your vending machines are now going to have to show the nutritional count on your candy bars. It's the education. So education is huge, because I truly don't believe anyone sits there and goes, nope, I'm absolutely going to do that. I don't care that it's going to make me, you know, 40 times more applicable to heart disease or...
Well, do you think they have to have a provision, or maybe they do? Let me ask you this. I think if people see a direct relationship to changing lifestyle and have a nice reduction in their insurance premium, that could be good motivation. Is that occurring now? Can it occur? How do you make that sort of customize direct reduction of cost of premiums if there's a change in your lifestyle?
You can do it now. It's very difficult to do. So we don't see it very often because it's more of an incentive. You can incentivize someone for taking a smoking cessation program, for example. But in 2014, you're actually going to be able to penalize those people. And that's where the amount an employer is going to be able to charge for a non-healthy lifestyle is going to be between 30% and 50% more than the folks who are living a healthy lifestyle. It gets very, very, very touchy when you do that because there's certain things that, well, smoking is an easy one. But, for example, obesity. Sometimes there's absolutely nothing that person can do to change their weight.
So what would they do with that? You have to take, like, Weight Watchers or something?
Well, I don't know. That's one of those guidelines we're still waiting for.
Wow. This sounds confusing, Jim.
This sounds like a whole new business area for someone.
Yeah, actually, who says there's no jobs out there? You could create a business. What would the business be? Let's get creative here. What would it be?
Just thinking about just the testing that you have to go through and all the different things that you can or can't do, and then the HIPAA parts of it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's right. And you mentioned that a little bit, the HIPAA part where you maybe that was on a break. Why don't you describe that a little bit?
Well,
why there's a conflict.
There's a conflict. You cannot ask certain questions, or there's a timing as to when you can ask those questions. You certainly can't ask someone about their health status prior to their enrollment into a plan. That's a conflict. It's not allowed under HIPAA. And there's a lot of the two pieces of legislation that don't quite fit right now. So one would presume as we move forward that those will be tweaked and
Now, you were involved, you're very involved in this, right? So were you up in Washington as this thing was going on?
I have been, yes. I've lobbied.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. So tell us, can you tell us much about that experience?
It's interesting. You know, my experience is that generally the lawmakers have their opinions set before you walk through the door. And if you walk in and you said, this is what I want to talk about, within the first five words coming out of your mouth, they've decided whether you're on their side or the other side.
Really?
And they kind of shut down.
Wow. So what do? Pick one off at a time or do you?
No. Yeah. You usually go into each office and talk to them one at a time. But, and that's generally speaking. I have had great success with folks who didn't have the same opinion I did. I've written some white papers for them And so there are some folks that'll sit back and listen, just kind of have to find a way to appeal to them just like you would any consumer.
Wow, that sounds interesting. Jim, have you ever done that?
I've done a little lobbying.
Oh, yeah?
That's a tough job.
That involves a lot of different skill sets.
Patience is the first one.
Yeah, major patience, but also great communication skills and great knowledge like you have in this area. And you got to figure they have to appreciate that, at least, if they have the patience to sit down and so you could describe this.
Yes, if they're willing to listen, they usually do appreciate it.
Most listen or most don't?
About half and half.
Really? Wow. I wonder if it's half and half. That could be one side or the other, or that could be half of one side and half of the other side. Not sure. Anyway, is there a website on your company or something that you want to give out to educate people?
Absolutely. They can go to www.blackgoogle.com, and we have a little tab on there for healthcare reform.
And what's it again? What's that website?
www.blackgould.com.
Wow, so there's some good educational opportunities there. So that's www.blackgould.com. I'm going to go on that website. And so do you write some of that stuff?
Or? I do.
Wow, well, that is phenomenal. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Absolutely.
Can you believe it? Time just flew by.
It's very fast.
Well, that's amazing. Ruth Ann Laswick, Vice President of Marketing for Black Gould & Associates, thank you. We'll have to have you on again because this is a fascinating subject and a major impact on America. Of course, Jim Hyten, thank you. Nice seeing you again.
Good to see you, Dave.
And we'll have someone else next month on Empowering Women. But definitely go to www.blackgould.com and go to Jim's website, too. What is your website?
It's on our card.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah. Well, just Google Reitenauer, Heighton, and Lewis. And
you'll get there.
Yeah. And we'll be right back with Understanding Autism.
FamilyValuesRadio.net.
1010 KXXT.
Tolleson, Phoenix.